Okay, today is Wednesday, February the 20th, 14th of Adar, Purim Katan. This is the Chumash year. We're up to Perek Chaf Hei, Pasuk Yud Zayin.
Okay, Rabotai. We are up to the conclusion of Parshat Ki Teitzei. Three incredibly famous psukim, the mitzvah of Zechirat Amalek, found to conclude this particular parsha. Perek Chaf Hei, Pasuk Yud Zayin. Zachor Eit Asher Asa Lecha Amalek Baderech B'Tzeitchem B'Mitzrayim. Remember that which HaKadosh Baruch Hu did, what Amalek did to you as you were traveling from Mitzrayim. Asher Karcha Baderech, perchance he happened to encounter you on the road. Vayizaneh Bechol Kol Hanecha Shalim Acharecha, and he trampled upon those who were dragging behind. It's a loose translation. The ata ayefi ageya, you are very, very tired. Velo yore Elohim, and somebody is not God fearing, either you or him. V'haya v'haniach Hashem Elokecha lecha et kol oyvecha mikra mikol oyvecha misaviv, as HaKadosh Baruch Hu will allow you to gain a measure of rest from all of the enemies surrounding you, asher Hashem Elokecha noten lecha nachala l'rishta, then timche et zecher Amalek v'tachat Hashemayim lo tishkach. You'll erase the memory of Amalek lo tishkach. I don't know why
it's not going on.
So, in order to appreciate the background, we simply have to just briefly review a couple of psukim found in Parshat Bishalach, which is the origin of the story of the attack of Amalek. It's found at the end of Parshat Bishalach in Sefer Shmot. It is the end of chapter 17 of Sefer Shmot. The last nine psukim of Parshat Bishalach. Yes.
It doesn't say anywhere that the authority should be for a generation. It just says like when they get relative peace.
No, that's when you are obligated to begin this attack. That's when you should start. We'll talk about that. You have no obligation to do so as yet. When you finally come into Israel, have some rest, that's when you're obligated to begin the procedure. But there's no reason why it's not Ladoro. Unless you have a mitzvah where it's told that it's for a specific time, the assumption is that every mitzvah is Ladoro. Okay, so if you look at the end of Parshat Bishalach, you will find that Am Yisrael are not very far away from crossing the Yamsuf after having left the shrine. That's described in the middle of Parshat Bishalach, the Shira. We enter the Midbar, and what happens? You know, a couple of days later, Bnei Yisrael complains, we don't have any water. Then we have no food. So in Parshat Bishalach, you'll have God providing at the city of Marah. He provided sweet water by telling Moshe to throw a tree into the water. Then he gives them the man. And then all of a sudden, there is another shortage of water, and Moshe tells, HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells Moshe to strike the rock, this time to strike the rock, and then all of a sudden Amalek appears. All of a sudden Amalek appears. And it's Pasuk Chet, Perek Tet Zayin, Pasuk Chet. See, it's Perek Tet Zayin, excuse me. It's Yud Zayin. Yud Zayin Chet. Vayavo Amalek, Vayilachem in Yisrael Birifidim, Vayomer Moshe El Yeshua Becharlanu Anashim, Vetsehi Lachem Bamalek, Machor Anochi Nitzav Al Rosh Hagiva, Umate Elohim Biyadi, Vayas Yehoshua Kasher Omar Elohim Lilachem Bamalek, Umoshe Baron Vechor Alu Rosh Hagiva. Fine, Amalek attacks. Moshe tells Yehoshua, go up to assemble people, an army. Moshe decides to go up to the mountain, and their famous statement, "V'haya kashe yarim Moshe v'gavar Yisrael, v'chashe yaniach Moshe v'gidol v'gavar Amalek, v'day Moshe kvedim." Moshe's hands were very heavy. They put a stone underneath. Very nice. Then pasuk yudim v'yachalosh Yehoshua at Amalek v'et Amalek v'chore. He totally wiped them out. Vayomer Hashem Moshe, Ksov Zot Zikaron Basefer. Write down this event in the text. V'sim Bosnei Yehoshua, Ki Macho Emche Et Zecher Amalek Mitachat Hashemayim. I, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, will wipe out Amalek from the face of this earth. Vayiven Moshe Mizbeach Vayikra Shmo Hashem Nisi. Moshe built a Mizbeach. He calls it, God is my miracle. Vayom Vayomer Kiyad Al Kesya Milchama Hashem Ba'Amalek Midor Dor. The throne of God is identified as Yah Yud Hey, only half of the Shem Hashem Yud Kei Vav Kei. And as long as God's name will not be recognized throughout the world as complete, it'll be Milchama Hashem Ba'Amalek Midor Dor, generation to generation. What? Correct, but that's correct. But he, it's Milchama Lashem. The objective is to accomplish what is missing in the first half. First half is a recognition that only part of the world recognizes God. The objective will be Milchama Lashem Ba'Amalek, to ultimately have everybody, including Amalek, or anybody else, recognize the authority of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's it. That's the story of Amalek. And now, as we are approaching Eretz Yisrael, the end of Sefer Dvarim, Moshe reminds Am Yisrael, Zachor et asher asa lecha Amalek. That was 40 years ago. 40 years ago. Baderech b'tzeichem l'Mitzrayim. So we will examine our psukim now and try to understand why HaKadosh Baruch Hu is so angry at Amalek, where he institutes something that does not exist by any other nation of the world. Let's see how the text would support this idea. Under normal circumstances, ladies, I know you've studied history. What might have been some of the factors which motivated great kings, czars, to engage in war? What may have been their military objective of the great conquerors of the world?
What land?
What? Expansion of land. Good. What else?
Power.
What else?
Riches.
What?
Resources.
Yes. What else?
Women.
Good. They had a war. Right. Exactly. Animosity. They did something to me. I got to pay them back. The only way to... Good. Those are all of the typical reasons why fame, right? You want to demonstrate, which is a thing with power. You want to demonstrate to the world that you are the greatest, the most powerful in the world. What?
Spread religion.
That's correct. Spread religion. Today, that's the primary reason why people go to war and kill people in the name of God. Now we will read the Torah's description of what Amalek did, and we will see it will repel every conventional reason for attacking Am Yisrael. Every single conventional reason. Zachor et asher asalecha Amalek. One. Baderech B'tzeichem Mitzrayim. Where did the attack take place? We were walking in the desert having just left Mitzrayim. So what if that automatically eliminates? What source of normal going to war? Right? Right. There's no attacking of land. There's no looking to expand the land. We don't have any land. We don't have any money because what are we doing? We're just walking around in the desert. What else? What else? Okay. The Rukush Gadol perhaps. Okay. But how are they supposed to know about that? What else? What else? What other reasons were given? Oh, good. Yeah, so you mentioned it's an animosity. We had an attack on them. Oh, Asher Korcha Baderech. They happened to bump into you. They had never had any contact with us. There was no dialogue. We didn't owe them money. There was no argument. Nothing.
But they heard about this wonderful miracle that happened in this land, to this nation, and they were jealous of it.
Who said that they heard anything about us?
What, Amalek didn't hear that?
We will see. We will see. That's exactly what's going to happen. We will see what's going to happen. Shamu Amim, we'll see in a second.
That's got to prove that they're more powerful.
Okay, we're going to get to it. It's going to be the last line. Asher Karcha Baderech. So it's not that there was any interaction with us prior to this, which should have served as a legitimate excuse to initiate attack. We didn't insult their king. We didn't renege on a commitment. Nothing. Next, Vayezanev Becha Kol Hanecheshalim. Mazechalash. Weak. What did they attack? Who did they attack? The weak. Where do the weak travel into Achavecha? I'm sure you've all been counselors, right? And you take your bunk. Exactly. You take your bunk on a hike, and everybody's in there. You got two little kids walking on 3 miles behind. Hi, I'm too tired. I can't walk. So if somebody were to pluck off the guys who are straggling at the end, that's really going to demonstrate your military might. That's going to demonstrate your military might. You're attacking whom? The Necheshalim Acharecha. The ones who are lagging far behind, who can't keep pace, the stragglers, the Nachschleppers. So is that the way you're going to justify, you know, your power? When Hitler wants to attack Russia, that's going to make a statement. Because after all, little Poland and this one doesn't attack the great Russia, that'll finally solidify his claim to this world. But by having somebody attack the feeble, handicapped people schlepping in behind, acharecha, ve'ata hayeth v'yageya. What have you been doing for the last 210 years? They've been slaves working at back-breaking labor. You've developed no great. You're not armed. Who are you? You're a tired people who have been working for 210 years for somebody else. What possible threat could you have presented to these people? What is the only reason why they attack? V'lo yarei Elohim. Because they heard about this God, and now we take your point, now we take it out of the Keshulah, and we suddenly reread the last couple of psukim of the Shira. Sham'u amin yirgazum. The nations of the world suddenly were afraid. Chil ochaz yoshnei kolashet. Fear. Chil is fear. But is chalchal hamalka. She was afraid. Chil, ochaz, grabbed a hold of what? Yoshvei Pelashet. Elei Moav, Yochasei Morad. Everybody has heard of the incredible events that have taken place. Comes along Amalek and says, I'm afraid of nobody. I don't believe in this God. This guy makes no impression upon me. And therefore, they decide to attack. So all of the conventional reasons as to why nations typically engage in military conquest have no bearing, no resemblance, no application here whatsoever. Zero. It is only one reason. Because they are v'lo yarei Elohim. Now, this reading, ladies and ladies, is a drastic switch from the way I translated the first couple of phrases. Why? Why is my interpretation not consistent the way I interpreted the first phrases? Because who is the subject of everything?
Yeah.
And suddenly, what is v'lo yarei Elohim referring to?
Amalek. We're going to see that there are alternate interpretations. But right now, this is going to fit into my scheme very well.
It is for this reason, because the attack is centered against HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that how did HaKadosh Baruch Hu react in Parshat Vishalach? Who said that whose charge was the victim? HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, I'm doing this myself. Macho Emche Etzechar Amalek. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, I am involved myself. Why am I involved? Because this is an attack upon me directly. But once there is going to be Chilul Shem Shamayim, if there is going to, yes, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is involved. And in theory, does he need our assistance to accomplish his objective? Of course not. HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted to eliminate Amalek personally and say, come on Amalek, make my day, you know, be my guest. He can be the first Steve McQueen, no doubt about it, right? Come attack, make my day, no problem. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants us to realize that if there is what? If there is Chilul Shem Shamayim, no member of Am Yisrael is permitted to rest and sit by idly if HaKadosh Baruch Hu's name is being desecrated. And therefore, we have to participate as well. Timche et Zecher Amalek mitachat HaShemayim lo tishkach. In fact, Reb Chaim has this incredible insight based on an interesting Rambam. I think I once told you this. In Parshat Va'et Hanan, the Torah told us, we learned it many moons ago, concerning the seven nations of who are occupying Israel, Lo Tichayet Kol Nishama. You are not permitted to allow any inhabitant of the Kanani, the Frizi, the Chiti, the Amori remain alive. Good. Rambam asks the question, if you, in the 13th century, or 12th century, the time enough, you meet somebody who's from Kina'ani, or says he's from Kina'ani, are you obligated to kill him based on the pasuk of Lo Techayeh Kol Neshama? Says the Rambam, you are not. Why? Ho'il u'bilbel sancheiriv et kol ha'umot. Because Sancheiriv, the king of Ashur, when he engaged in conquest, he came up with a theory, a plan, that the way to gain and exercise control of other nations is to displace them from their homeland. Then they become totally disoriented. So people from Germany, he puts them in Ecuador. And people from Ecuador, he puts them in Russia someplace. So when somebody comes today and we think he's a Kana'ani, we have no evidence that he's a Kana'ani. So the Rambam writes, since Sancheiriv Melech Ashur ba u'bilbel et kol ha'umot, it's based on a Gemara in Masechet Brachot, Rambam writes, today halacha l'ma'aseh, there is no obligation to engage in the mitzvah of Lo Techayeh et kol neshama. And if you think somebody's a Kanani, you dare not kill him. Because if he is not a Kanani, you violate the law of Lo Tirtzach. So we don't engage in such a mitzvah. Ask Rav Chaim, why did the Rambam say the same thing about Amalek? There is a mitzvah, Macho Emche et Zecher Amalek. Macho Timche et Zecher Amalek. So the Rambam describes this particular mitzvah, and he does not tell us that in my day, in the Rambam's time, this mitzvah is suspended. Based on the fact that what? That Amalek was also, the people of Amalek were also interspersed throughout the world by Sancheiriv Melech Ashur. Says Rav Chaim, because Amalek is not a people. Amalek is an idea. Anybody whose ultimate goal is to destroy Am Yisrael and challenge the authority of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, such a person is halakhically entitled to be Amalek. And therefore the mitzvah of Michiyat Amalek, says the Rambam, applies even at Hayom Hazeh. Because you don't have to have somebody who is a natural descendant of Amalek, such as today's Purim Katan. Haman, in the Megillah, is described as what? Ha-Agogi, Ha-Amaleki. He is an Amalek. He's a descendant of. So we know that the mitzvah of Mechias Amalek applies. But Hitler, Arafat, and who else there is today, thousands of them, there's no direct route. Rambam says it applies nonetheless anyhow. Why? Because the attack is directed against HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's an idea, and it's in full force. However, Rambam tells us, and we will see this, how the pasuk fits in as well. Shalosh mitzvot nitztavu Yisrael b'knisatan la'aretz. Three mitzvot Am Yisrael were commanded upon entering the land. One. Limnot lahem melech. Two, limchot zaro shel Amalek. And three, livnot beit ha-dechira. And once again, says Rav Chaim, the order is essential. The idea of Mechiyat Amalek is a national struggle. It's not my struggle as an individual. It's a national struggle because it's an attack against HaKadosh Baruch Hu. How do we mobilize and identify that it's for what? That it's a national struggle? It has to be done under the auspices of a king. So before you start launching and doing anything, first, limnot mehem melech. Then, mochin et zaro shel Amalek. And then you build the Beit HaMikdash. Why? Because you can't build a Beit HaMikdash. What's the grand purpose of the Beit HaMikdash? What's the grand purpose of the Beit? Not only to serve as the central house of worship for Am Yisrael, but it's designed the way Shlomo HaMelech and Melachim. It's what? Correct. Every nation of the world is supposed to come to the house of HaKadosh Baruch Hu and acknowledge that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is... If there is an Amalek out there, don't bother building the Beit HaMikdash, because its objective cannot be fulfilled. So here is what Shari pointed out. V'haya, when will this mitzvah be incumbent upon you? B'haniach Hashem Elokecha Lecha Mikol Oyvecha Nisaviv. When you finally have come to rest. When did Am Yisrael appoint the king? When they walked into Israel, did they appoint a king? No. It's a long time till you get started with the king, right? Then, once you have a strong central government, a strong sense of a nationalistic idea, now that Melech rallies the forces and engages in the battle against Amalek. But when you're going in to conquer, that's not your objective. It's not your objective. And here, the Torah says something. It's hard to mouth those words. It's hard to. Yet, Shaul lost his kingdom because he didn't follow instructions. Everybody remembers it. It's the Haftarah Parshat Zachor. When HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, Machotim Chetzech Amalek, what does it mean? Man, woman, child, animal. There is to be no Shemetz, not a trace left of Amalek. Because if you're going to see a little shepsela, a little sheep, what are you going to say? Ooh, that was an Amaleki sheep. Ooh, Amaleki. You're going to mention his name. There has to be such an erasure, an abolition of Amalek's name, that his name should be so eradicated that you don't even bring it up in casual conversation. So if you see a little hunt, a little dog, oh, that's an Amalek. What do you mean? There's no Amalek dog around. You eliminate every single living creature. It's hard to understand why HaKadosh Baruch Hu would say, kill men, women, and even more difficult, children. Hard to imagine that you and me are to go over to a little baby and kill the baby. It's hard to imagine people, Rachmanim, B'nai Rachmanim, doing something like this. The animals, okay, I could hear, it's much easier to kill some animals than to kill a human being. This is unbelievable. And yet, Shaul, just one more second, Shaul, he blew it, not only because he allowed the animals, but who else did he leave? He left that guy, Melech Amalek. Wanted to bring him as a prize to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He wanted to bring Behemoth upon the Mizbeah, thanking God for allowing him to defeat Amalek. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, what is those favorite words, those famous words? You think, what do I write? Do I rather have Chelev Elim Milahachiv Ledvari? You think I need these stinking animals as Korbanot? What I want you to do is listen to me. That's all I want. Follow instructions. Yeah.
So did David HaMelech actually
accomplish
this?
No. Nobody has yet. That is correct. Okay, it's a good question. It's a very good question. Why did David Melech feel that he has, you know, he's completely accomplished that objective? Maybe at the time he felt that there was no nation any longer, since, you know, they finished the job, they eventually killed Agag. Maybe that was it. Maybe temporarily they felt, it's a good question. It's a good question. Yeah.
In theory, if Shaul wasn't killed, all the animals and Agag, there would not have been any other Amalekis in the world. I mean, can you ever really destroy the entire...
Can you? Good.
Who hates the Jews, isn't it?
That's Esav Soder Yaakov. That's correct. When is that? The question is, when is that all going to end? That's the essence, according to Rambam, of the Messianic dream. According to the Rambam, nothing's going to change. Everything's going to go on as usual. There's only going to be one thing. Every single nation will finally recognize that our God is the legitimate God of the world. Yakiru v'yedu kol yoshvei tevel ki lecha tichra kol berech. That's it. They will observe Sheva Mitzvot Bei Noah, and nobody's going to want to kill us. That's the Messianic era, where no person on this planet will ever again attempt to kill you and me because we're Jew boys. That's it. That's what's going to happen. You're right. They'll engage in productive activity. Right? A couple of morons will be Met fans, you know, that's it. Productive activity. Productive activity. That's all. Or I should say a productive activity, yes.
So first of all, so are we equating not fearing Hashem with hating Jews? Is that necessary?
No. In this case, when a person only wants to eradicate a Jew for one reason, because he's Jewish, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu takes is an attack against him. Because why you ask? Because I selected this nation. They're not shepherding you, they're not robbing you, they're not a threat to you. So why do you hate them? So it's an attack against me.
And then the other thing is, aside from not understanding, you know, from it being difficult, of course, to understand the things that men, women, child, animals, but also it's even more difficult to understand that if we take it, understanding that Amalek is not a people, but an idea. Because if it's a people, then anyone associated with those people. But if it's an idea, then it's whoever buys into that.
Correct. And you would now be duty bound to eliminate that person's whole family. Anyone who bought into that idea.
Because it's not genetic, it's ideological.
Correct. So whatever family buys into that idea, the mitzvah is kill him, kill his wife, kill his children, and kill his animals.
Okay, so even if his wife didn't buy in...
That's correct. Certainly none of the kids could say, bought into our Molech. They were sitting in their house. They weren't participating in the battle against... When they attacked in Parshas V'Shalom, trust me, they didn't have their little two-year-olds with them. And their wives were not... Correct. Today, they use them as human shields. They're worse off. Okay. But Amalek, in that respect, they're worse off than Amalek. They are involving the children to become part of the sinner. I grant you that 100%. Yes.
But we know from the way Yaakov set up his... people to greet Esau, that he put the more important in front and the weaker and weaker behind, or the less important or the more less important to him. So you have to assume that the way the Bnei Yisrael were traveling was that the women and children went behind, and the weakest, maybe the youngest children or whatever, and the animals.
No. There is no such evidence that when Am Yisrael traveled in four flanks, that it was only the men keeping up and all the women and children were lagging all the way behind. There's no evidence to that at all. No evidence to that. It's a nice suggestion.
That would explain why if they attacked...
Could be. I'm not saying no. Now let's say... Yeah.
Is that naked
in the Chemet Mitzvah? Of course. It's an absolute Chemet Mitzvah. It's one of the three Milchamot Mitzvah for which there are no military exemptions whatsoever. None whatsoever. Milchemet Mitzvah. Afilu chatan mechupato. Vikala mechupata. Motzin oto la milchama. There are no military exemptions. The military exemptions that we learned about at the end of Parshat Shoftim, the Asher Eirat Isha, Velolikacha, built out, Yorei, Coward, all of that applies only to Milchemet Ushut. Milchemet Mitzvah, there are no excuses. Three Milchemot Mitzvah. One, Amalek. Two, conquest of Eretz Yisrael and defending its citizens. Three, any Jew that is in danger any place in the world. And Tevi, that was Milchemet Mitzvah. Because there were Jews someplace on this world threatened. That's Milchemet Mitzvah. Iraqi nuclear, 1981, Milchemet Mitzvah. Hopefully they'll bomb Iran one day also, they'll bomb the reactor. Yes.
When you're talking about this topic, nowadays it almost sounds theoretical, and realistically, what are we talking about nowadays? There's no Mila.
Correct.
So
we have a government that represents Malucha.
Right.
The elected government of the United Israel has a halacha of Mila.
So realistically, we're supposed to be going in and killing off Maja? I just don't understand.
Yeah. But you have to also assess, of course you have to assess the political, you have to assess the loss of life.
Exactly.
I'm not saying you shouldn't. That doesn't mean that in theory the mitzvah is not there. There is a mitzvah, yes. He is included in that picture, Velishum Safek. And that if the Israeli government made it a step and that we could get away with it, they will do it.
So my question is, so is this when it says, you know, Amalek, at what cost?
There always is a cost figure.
Right.
Moshe knew that when he sent Yehoshua out to battle, that there was a possibility there were going to be casualties. Interestingly enough, none are reported. Mm-hmm. We don't have a shred of evidence that one person was lost in that battle. And we know that there were other wars where we know that there were. We know for a fact that they were. But sometimes the Torah, it's just strange. It is so unlikely that if you have this heroic fighter, Amalek, and Am Yisrael take battle, these guys who have been enslaved for 210 years, not exactly trained in military strategy and so on, and not one casualty to suffer, it's somewhat strange. But war, by definition, entails some risk factors. But the military general has to assess how much risk we're willing to take. Halachically, they speak about it. Somebody came and said, this is halacha pikuach nefesh. Right? Pikuach nefesh is doicha everything. So why do I have to serve in the army? There's a danger, I'm going to live. I'm going to die. So there's a danger, I'm going to die. I should be exempt from military service. The answer is, by definition, the mitzvah of going to war has that element in it, and you can't use that as a factor. That overrides pikuach nefesh.
Is the rabbi not involved in this?
In theory, probably not, but I can tell you, there is this organization now, and I heard him speak, he came to school a couple weeks ago, and I've heard him speak in Israel a while ago, he came last year. His name is from, he's the Rosh Yeshiva, the B'nai Akiva Yeshiva in Petach Tikva, Yuval Shurlow. Rav Yuval Shurlow is a Grush graduate, who is the Rosh Yeshiva in Petach Tikva, and he is the head of a committee that serves as the Ethics and Morality Committee to Tzva Hagana Yisrael. And that before the army goes ahead and targets a car in Gaza, they have to make an assessment how many children might be killed. And this committee now participates in the deliberations whether ethically or morally it's worth, you know, it speaks volumes that there is such a committee.
Why is that not public?
It's an excellent question. I don't know the answer to that question. I don't know the answer to the question. I'm not saying that always the army accepts their recommendations, but at least they listen. And if they try to highlight that ethically and morally, the cost factor is not the gain, the net gain is not worth the price, they will make a recommendation that the government does not strike. Don't shoot that missile. I was shocked that the government even listens a key. Who's that to that? I was shocked. Okay, I understand, but there are also, that's if you're willing to go along and say that every Palestinian in Hamas is now to be considered Amalek. So maybe some of them don't think that they're all Amalek. And there are also other considerations as well, you know, you have to, it's a good question. Why should we care? They don't particularly care, you know, they don't care about us. Let's take a little rush. Yeah.
On the Nephilim?
Yes.
On the Nephilim
of
Echo? What?
Don or Gone? I forget
which one it is.
Save the Chol Gone.
So Gone, that's number one. And also there was Anan. Was Anan a in the back?
In theory, yes. He tethered the Nachshlepes. He was the last flank, so when somebody, right, he gathered somebody, and also when somebody lost something, he'd pick it up and they'd retrieve it for somebody. So in all probability, they attacked the back flank of Dun. That is correct. Okay, let's take a look how Rashi interprets some of these things. Rashi Yud Zayin. First question which Rashi asks is, which nobody here is, what's the connection to the previous unit? Remember, we've been doing that pretty often. So Rashi says, "Im shakarta b'midot mishkalos, havei doeg min girui ha'oyev." If you falsify weights and measures, if you don't have accurate weights and measures, beware of the attack from the enemy. And he cites the pasuk in Mishlei, Mosnei Mirma, false or fake weights, Mosnei Mirma weights, Toavat Hashem. It's considered an abomination of God. Mishlei got it from the pasuk. Pasuk Tetzayin says, Ki Toavat Hashem Kolos Eile. Uksiv Basrei, and the next pasuk says in Mishlei, Ba Zadon Vayavo Kalon. So somebody who is a rebeller against God, a zadon, and what happened? Vayavo kalon, maseh kalon, shame. Where did the shame come? Upon Am Yisrael, that we were attacked by these people. God allowed them to attack us. Why did he allow them to attack us? Because we were deceptive in weights and measures, claims Rashi.
So that's below your pay over
him. What?
That's the Lo Yireh Elohim,
the Finitron. Ah, correct. The Lo Yireh Elohim, if that's the case, is not a description of Amalek. Correct. In fact, please flip back to Parshat Bishalach for a minute.
It says about the only measurement.
No, that's not the one.
No.
Not the puzzle. No. Please go back to Bishalach for 1 second. What is the last, it's Perek Yud Zayin, Pasuk Tet Zayin. What is the last Pasuk before Vayavo Amalek? For
But they called the name of what? The name of the place Matzah. Why did they call the name of the place Matzah? Matzah. Nisayon. Matzah Nisayon.
Trial.
What were they testing? Hayesh Hashem v'kirbeinu imayim. What does that mean? What does that mean? The Hayesh Hashem v'kirbeinu imayim. Is Hashem really with us or not? By challenging him, what are we going to drink? Where's the water? So Shmuel showed me just a couple of days ago that he's very capable of providing for water. There was no water. He said, throw a lousy tree into the thing, all the water became sweet. 2 days later, they're already complaining, no water. What's going on? So many looked at it as what? As a test again. So it's not just that they were complaining about the lack of water, but what were they complaining about? Hayesh Hashem v'kirbeinu imayim. And the next pasuk, Vayavo Amalek. This is Rashi here. How does HaKadosh Baruch Hu react when we are not as committed to Him as we should be? How does HaKadosh Baruch Hu react? He sends Girui HaOyev. Exactly. In fact, Chazal interpret the last word in that pasuk. Vayilachem im Yisrael berifidim. Rifidim, according to men, is Rafu Yadayim min HaTorah. What does that mean? Rafu Yadayim. Their hands became weak. In other words, they were no longer as committed to what? To embracing the Torah. And the symbol of activity, productivity, or lack thereof is always expressed through what? Through the hands. And that's why many explain it. It makes a lot of sense. What does Moshe do at this time? Raises his hands unto HaKadosh Baruch Hu. What signal is he trying to communicate to what? To Am Yisrael. That's the problem, buddies. If we were to now turn our attention to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, there's nothing to fear. Zero. And that's what the Mishnah, famous Mishnah in Rosh Hashanah asks. V'chiyadav shel Moshe osot bilchamah? You mean to tell me Moshe's hands determine the outcome of the battle? His hands go up, they win. His hands go down, they win. No, that doesn't mean it. It means, when his hands go up, that's a sign is she'osin ritzon no shel makom. And when osin ritzon no shel makom, nothing happens. When his hands go down, that's rifyon. Your hands are weak. It means your hands are not involved in pu'ulat Hashem. The consequence is that vayavo amalek, vayilachem in yisrael berifidim. So Rashi here is consistent with that which appears over there, and you're 100% right. Develo yarei Elohim. At the end of the pasuk, will not be a characteristic describing amalek, but will be a characteristic describing Am Yisrael. Yes.
Well, if it was a characteristic perhaps describing both, then it would really be acknowledging that this is an ideology that we're fighting, that basically we have to eliminate them because their ideology is addictive, especially to people, or persuasive to people whose faith are weak.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I'm not 100%. No doubt. It's true. So that's Rashi's first point. Second point, Rashi, Pasuk Yudchet. Asher karcha lashon mikre. Rashi first interprets the simple pshat. Mikre means it's a pasir. It happened. It just came about by chance. Again, there was no interaction, no reason to it. They just bumped into us. Then Rashi decides to quote several midrashic interpretations. Dovar acher, lashon keri v'tum'ah. It refers to keri and tum'ah, shahaya mitam'an b'mishkav zachor.
The word carry technically means when a male has any type of discharge, sexual discharge, he becomes tumat carry. Tumat carry. And when you're a tumay, you can't do certain things. You can't go into the Beit HaMikdash when you're a bal carry. You have to go to the mikveh first. So it's a word which indicates a source of tumah. And we know it's not just a midrashic imagery that uses that expression. Please open up for a second to Vayikra, Perek Chavav. Vayikra, Perek Chavav for a minute. The beginning of the Tochecha. It's Pasuk Yud or Yud Aleph, something along those lines. Now here you Dalit. Now I'll get you the next one. Here, Pasuk Chaf Dalit. Pasuk Chaf Dalit. Chaf Gimel and Chaf Dalit. Ve'im Ve'ele, Chaf Gimel. God starts saying, I'm going to punish you. I'm going to punish you. Ve'im Ve'ele Lo Tivasruli. If through all of what I did up until now, it's not going to influence you. Ve'halakta Imi what? Carry, you're going to go with me and treat me like what? Me, like a source of what? Tum'ah, which is repulsive. That's how you're going to treat me. So what does HaKadosh Baruch Hu say? I'll treat you as repulsive people too. I'll show you what it means to be repulsive. Because Tum'ah created an image in people's minds. Stay away from them. You know, they're vile, they're disgusting, they're filthy, they're dirty. Tumah didn't only have its spiritual connotation, it was pictured and portrayed in a very physical way. And the Torah uses it here. Says Rashi, here too, Davar acher lashon keri vitumah. Vitumah. Shahaya mitaman, and how did he defile them spiritually? That Amalek engaged in homosexual behavior with the men. Mishkav Zachor. That's one interpretation. Davar acher. Asher karcha is lashon kor v'chol. What's a kor? Hot and cold. Cold and hot. Kor v'chom. Cold and hot. Senenecha v'hipshircha merchis chasecha. He cooled off the heat. The heat. What do I mean he cooled off the heat? After Mitzrayim, after Kriyas Yamsuf, it was hands off, obviously. Why hands off? These guys are hot. Don't touch them. They got this divine protection. And as we just said, Shomu Amir Gaza. What happens when Amalek attacks? What? You break the spell. Cool them down. It cooled them down. It's exactly Rashi gives this thing about the scalding hot bath. Ambati. Nobody wanted to jump in. So one Meshuggah jumped in and he got burnt. They got burnt. But what do other people say? He got burnt, but I can jump in and do what? I'm not going to get burnt. Cool already. It's cool already, precisely. So what happens as a result of Amalek's attack is that it will serve as an impetus for what? For what? For other nations to attack as well. Mm-hmm. So Rashi claims, Asher Korcha, he cooled off the heat. That which was up until now a no hands, a restricted zone, it's no longer restricted. You can go ahead and attack. You can go ahead and attack. Then the next Rashi. Vayizanev Bechar. Rashi quotes a midrash. Makat Zanav. What's a Zanav? It means a tail. A tail. A tail is the, you know, like the least important part of an animal. A tail. When the imagery is a dog wagging its tail at you, it's like he's ridiculing you. You know?
Oh, that is
That's the way they understand it. So what does he do? How does Rashi interpret this? What does this mean? He throws the tail at you. Chotech milot v'zorek klapei mala. He engages in circumcision of his own people, takes the foreskin and throws it to HaKadosh Baruch Hu and says, this is what you tell your people. This is what you tell your people. So he's trying to ridicule us and make us nothing but the tail of an animal, which is the least important part of the animal. Obviously a drash. Obviously a drash. Okay. All right, we'll stop here. We'll just put a couple of finishing touches on this or a couple of other things, and then we'll move on to Parshat Ki Tavo. Yes.